Jeff, welcome to our Aggie preview. We are a day late. We had some adulting things going on. Yesterday was my wife's birthday. Obviously, that was going to take precedence over this podcast. And it was a great time. We went out with some friends. First, we went to dinner. And because it's her birthday, some friends of ours, my best friend was like, "Oh, I'm going to order you a virgin margarita because it's your birthday." She's like, "Oh," so she brings it out. But then the waitress at the restaurant was like, "What do you mean virgin? Like, you can't drink a virgin margarita." We're like, "Well, we don't drink. What did you just bring in?" She's like, "Well, you're paying for alcohol and someone's drinking it." So when she brought out the margarita, she gave it to my wife and brought out a shot for herself. And the waitress did a shot at the table with us and say happy birthday. And it was great and wonderful. We left her a very large tip. And then we went and saw Dear Evan Hansen, which is a very, very good film. I don't know if you're probably not the musical type.
You know what? I'm not, but Dear Evan Hansen, what is the song? Tapping through the glass, something like that.
Tapping through the window.
That one. It speaks to my window. It speaks to my personal anxiety. So I've been a big fan of that song.
It is really, really good. Like one of those, the movie was over and we just kind of sat and like marinated in it for a couple minutes before we stood up and left. So I would highly recommend seeing it, but you have another story. Apparently, you and I as millennials may be approaching like get off my lawn years old. We may be approaching kids these days years old. And yeah, you have a bank, and the story that you are about to share, it could either be with this person or your grandma and would be indistinguishable.
It's true. I work at a bank, meaning I hire people who also work at a bank. Among the myriad of things that I am responsible for at said bank, one of them is our call center. And our call center is full of, as you would expect any call center to be, entry level, you know, just out of high school type of people. There's a few that are in college, a few that are just graduated, and then a bunch who are just out of high school. One of my employees, well, actually, I guess a little bit further backstory. I'm trying to make this quick today. We did a big initiative for our call center, and I bought pizza for everybody in the call center yesterday. One of these employees could not eat pizza. And because I don't think about these kinds of things, I just ordered it and sent it and said, "Thank you so much." And then when she was like, "Actually, I don't eat dairy," or whatever it was that was on, I don't remember. I said, "Oh yes, you're right. I'm insensitive. I should have asked for those dietary type restrictions, or if there was a vegan or whatever, I should have done that. That's on me." I didn't. And so I said, "Hey, just let me get you lunch tomorrow. I'll Venmo you $15. We'll call it good." Her response, Garrett, stopped me in my tracks.
Oh, no.
She said, "What is Venmo?" So the question I have for you, my friend, are we old? Is Venmo becoming the payment version of Facebook that it's just for people's parents now?
I hope not, because I use it all the time. But even then, my parents have finally figured out Venmo.
Yeah, I mean, I pay old people now with Venmo back and forth all the time. But gosh, this young person, and now she is very young. Like, she is just out of high school, and she decided to open up an account with us at our bank, and she might be, or this might be her first bank account. I mean, she's very, very young. But still, what is Venmo?
I mean, I guess you can get a Venmo debit card now. So it kind of is.
You can.
So yes. And you can actually pay like Venmo at businesses. Now I don't remember where I was at, but it was like the business had like a QR code and you could just pull up Venmo and scan it and pay using that. But I mean, Venmo is owned by PayPal. So it's like there was PayPal and all the old people figured that out. And then they bought Venmo and made it like the more social hit millennial thing. So they're going to have to come up with some other service that does the exact same thing that they can brand and market to Gen Zers.
Yeah. I mean, it's very interesting because I thought this would be kind of time proof, like generation proof, but apparently, I mean, and maybe this is just one person, right? Obviously one does not a market make, but that was a very shocking response for me. We got a big week, man. I'm excited for this week's show.
I am. We do also, part of this being a day late is we have some fun extracurriculars towards the end of the show that we are going to be recording this afternoon before we get this put up. And also there are some things that some other events that may also happen that we are going to talk about that we will also be delaying the release of this show. And I hope the events actually happen so I don't have to go back and edit the audio now that I think about this.
They will happen. I have it on absolute good authority. And when I say good authority, his dad reached out to me this morning and let me know what's happening.
Okay, so. That's good. That makes me feel good. So let's just jump right in to our Aggie preview because we are full. It is conference weekend. We are done with September games and it is time for us. You know, we can do the birthday, the discussion about the waitress taking shots and talk about Venmo and this and that, but it's time to get full on into football swing. So let's talk about the Aggies of Utah State. I don't know, looking at this, I expect the game honestly to be pretty similar to what we saw last week. In my notes I have is like their rush defense is not good at all across their D line. They average like 250 pounds on their D line and they're starting four, which is not good. And so even though it's as bad, and so we should be able to control the clock. And it does sound like there are some injuries. We have been sharing, if you haven't joined us on the Discord, come hop on in our VIP section. We've been sharing some of the injury updates throughout the week that we have heard. And it sounds like the defense, except for Keenan Ellis, I feel like anytime we give a defensive update, we're talking about everyone except for Keenan Ellis. Like, he's going to show up whenever his head, like when the concussion, whenever he gets clear to go. But so everyone except for Keenan Ellis, right? And we are good to go on the defense, but the offense is a little more banged up.
It is. I'm a little distracted. Cody Hagan, our news that we teased, we were 30 seconds premature. Okay.
So we can post this then.
We can post it immediately. Yeah.
Okay. And let's pivot to that. Let's talk about that then. Right.
Well,
now,
it's
a big deal
in real time. And I am having to, it's a big deal. You're right. And I am posting things on articles. Cougar Sports Insider, shout out to everybody. 1.1 million page views throughout the month of September. That's a great month.
That is a good month.
Cody Hagan, man, that's a big deal. He just committed to BYU. Cody Hagan, for those of you who don't know, I mean, and I think everybody does, Cody Hagan, four-star wide receiver out of Corner Canyon. He is absolutely one of the best wide receivers who has ever come out of the state of Utah, ever.
Yes.
He's not going to put up the gaudy numbers that Puka did. Although, I mean, through seven games this season, I think he's at like 900 yards. So he's approaching those numbers. But Puka was like 2,300 yards his senior year. It was insane. But Orem, back when Puka was there, he was the wide receiver threat. That was it. They had a strong running game with Noah Sewell. They had a good quarterback at Cooper Laga. But if they were going to throw the ball deep, it was going to Puka Nacua. Right. Cody Hagan plays. His team is absolutely loaded at Corner Canyon. And they spread the ball around a lot. And typically, Cody is not playing in like the fourth quarter for sure, and usually not the second half of the third quarter. And for him to already be at over 900 yards through six or seven games is pretty impressive.
Seven games, 44 catches, 906 yards, 8 touchdowns. Last year as a junior, he had 55 catches, 1,184 yards, and 18 touchdowns. So he averaged 21.5 yards a catch last year and 20.6 this year so far,
which does not suck. Some other things just about Cody real quick. When was the last time out of high school that BYU beat out Oregon, Michigan, USC, Utah, and Stanford for a wide receiver?
For a wide receiver, I am confident that answer is never.
Yeah, that is the answer.
For
the
a player,
never happened.
For a player, I mean, like Chaz Ayu had those kinds of offers, but obviously Chaz Ayu had much more ties to BYU than Cody Hagan ever has. So yep. It was like Chaz, even though Jason didn't play at BYU, right? Jason didn't play at BYU.
No, correct.
Right.
You are correct.
But the Ayu family is a very BYU family. So in a sense, Chaz was a legacy kid.
Yeah.
You know, you have Jacob Conover, who had big offers, but again, like kind of, you know,
but even he
is different.
Even Conover, he had that big Alabama offer, and that's what everybody talks about. But outside of that, and that was a weird class for Alabama. They offered like 20 quarterbacks. It was a little bit weird. He had an Arizona State offer. He had a couple of P5. Like it wasn't as consistently big offers as what we're seeing from Hagen here. This is a big deal. Cody at the BYU track invitational, whatever they call it for high school. I think it's the BYU invitational. Cody ran a 10.53 last year.
That is like Michael Davis fast.
That's fast. And he was a junior in high school. Like, he's still got speed to go. He's got some of the best athlete genes of anybody who is coming into the program. If you talk to people who are around Brighton High School, know anything about Brighton High School in the early 90s, they will tell you that Sean Hagen was Reno Mahe before Reno Mahe. Sean Hagen, let me just, because I don't know how much you know about Sean Hagen, but
I know nothing about Sean Hagen.
Let me tell you what the athlete blood of the Hagen family. Sean Hagen was Gatorade Player of the Year, whatever it was back then, out of the state of Utah, a phenomenal two-sport athlete. He was drafted by the Pittsburgh Pirates out of high school in the seventh or eighth round, right out of high school.
Eighth round.
And he ended up going and playing a couple of years in pro ball. Played in the minors. He never made it to the bigs. It sounds like I think he got the idea or got the realization that, hey, professional baseball wasn't going to happen. So after a couple of years playing around in the minors, he decided to go on a mission, came back home from his mission. So Garrett, we're now what, 4 or 5 years removed from playing football. He decided, I'm going to go to the University of Utah. I might as well walk on to the football team. Now, he didn't have like a crazy standout career as a member of the University of Utah, but he walked on to the football team after 5 years of not playing football and focusing on
it's like baseball. A Chris Winkie situation.
It is, but also throwing in a crazy mission that kills most athletes, right? Like Sean Hagen was insane. Like he is a freak of nature athlete. And if you see him today, he's still that. He looks like he could play professional football or college football right now. That's the blood that runs through Cody Hagen. He is an elite athlete, 10.53, and I think he will probably improve on that mark this year. His hands are silky smooth. I mean, he runs some. When he first got offered, it was easy to compare him to Dax Milne because they were similar in size. They live in similar areas. They looked very similar. And I think that's still true in terms of his hands, like his catching ability, his route running, very similar to what Dax Milne brings to the table. But he's a 10.53 guy. So he does a lot of the things that Dax Milne did and still does for Washington, but he does it with even more speed than what Dax had. That's impressive.
Yes, he is Dax, but better physically across the board. And Dax wasn't bad.
Dax is elite. Like, he's an NFL football player.
Right. And so this kind of also goes back to, and we also saw that Isamoa decommitted from Utah yesterday, who's another in-state kid who's very talented, another four-star player. And I know, so 24/7, the 24/7 ratings has Cody Hagen as a four-star, but on the composite where they include the Rivals and ESPN rating, he's only a three-star. I have a feeling that the narrative around Utah fans, seeing as this is a Utah legacy kid, is like, oh, big deal, we lost a three-star receiver. But if you go back, they were writing about him being a four-star receiver like 2 weeks ago. And how
I know Steve's my guy. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt that they're still going to refer to him as a four-star wide receiver.
Oh, I don't know about Steven, say the fans though. The fans.
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
But, right. And so, I mean, with Isamoa, right? Like Isamoa, his dad played at Utah as well a little bit after Sean Hagen. Right. And, but it's getting, and Isa is like, he has been very going, like he was, apparently he's excited that Cody Hagen committed. He's been heavy on the BYU stuff. It sounds like BYU is in the driver's seat, right? Like it depends on, you know, if Oregon or USC or like a big blue blood name comes and offers, you know, it's BYU's the leader in the clubhouse. And so it just really, it really shows just like how much momentum, like the amount of momentum around the program for the last month since going into Vegas, the day before Vegas, when that, the day before the season opener, when that reports came out of like, you know, 2 weeks before that was, oh, BYU is the prime target. And then it came out, you know, within the next week, it is expected for the Big 12 to expand and invite those teams. Just everything since then has been going BYU's way. Now you're getting potentially 2 4-star kids who are legacy players of your rival. And that is massive.
That's right? Huge.
Like you're winning the in-state guys. And it's like in the last few years, and I think a lot of it may even go back to last year. And we kind of talked about this around signing day with Raider DeMooney and Logan Fano is, you know, Logan, he could have gone anywhere. And uh-huh. he said, like, no, I want to stay home and I want to, like, you know, do it. And I think there is, like, Kalani, the culture around the program is people want to be there and guys want to be in the building. And BYU is the place to be right now. And we're starting to see it pick up.
It's a big deal. And I did talk with Sean. Sean's a great, great guy. That's the other side of this, is that the Hagen family is an incredible family. You are adding a family who is going to embrace and love BYU in the way that the Wilson family does. I mean, this is an incredible, incredible addition, not just Cody on the field, but everything else. Cole Hagen could end up walking on at BYU. He's committed to Yale. He's on a mission right now, quarterback. He's built very differently than Cody is. And he could find his way to BYU if BYU was lucky. I think they'd be lucky to have him. In talking with Sean, and I haven't had a chance to talk with Cody since he made this announcement official, but I will. But in talking with Sean, I mean, what was it that pushed BYU over the top? Because for a long time, it looked like Stanford was in the driver's seat. What was it that pushed BYU over the top? Exactly what you just kind of described. A culmination of a lot of things. The Big 12, the momentum of the program, the coaching staff and the hype and the way that they are, their personalities. All of these things kind of culminated into a really, really compelling pitch that Cody looked at it and was like, man, like, I get a lot of everything that I thought I was going to get at Stanford. I'm getting all of that and more at BYU. Plus, I can still come home on Sunday nights for dinner. That's a big deal. That's a really compelling recruiting pitch. One thing that that Sean did mention that I'm really impressed with, proud of, a little bit maybe proud of us. We had nothing to do with this, but it just kind of supports what we said several weeks ago, months ago even. Academics was specifically highlighted as one of the reasons that Cody would come to BYU. That's in over Stanford. Stanford was in his top 4. Now, again, don't want anybody to misconstrue what we've said all along. If you're a regular student, Stanford compared to BYU, Stanford. If you're a football player, Stanford compared to BYU, there is nothing that Stanford can offer that BYU cannot.
Even if you're a regular student, I mean, it just really depends on what you want. Like, if you are going and applying to your random run-of-the-mill Silicon Slopes tech company because you want to work in the startup life in Utah versus the Silicon Valley startup life, Stanford versus BYU and Provo, like, hiring at Thanksgiving point doesn't make a difference. And so it's
that's true.
And so it really is, like, it's not obviously Stanford in the ranking. Stanford is an elite academic institution, one of the top 10 universities in the world, but it's BYU is right there. And I'm doing air quotes, not right there. And I'm saying, like, oh, BYU is equal to Stanford, but in the classroom versus a degree is there to get you a job and get you where you want to go in your career with the lifestyle you want to live geographically, where you want to be. BYU can do a lot more. And that's something we've talked about, right? Like, it's, I'm personally, and shout out if you are listening to this, one of our Arizona listeners, I've reached out and I've been talking to Allegiant about doing group charters because I think there's enough BYU fans in the Phoenix area, especially in the East Valley, that you could do season tickets and have game day flights up and back into Provo out of the Mesa Gateway Airport. And there'd be enough support to pay for that, right? Like, and not other schools don't have that level of support. And it's like, if you go to BYU, it's like, do you want to work in Utah? Plenty of BYU people. You want to live in Southern California? You want to live in Arizona? You want to live in Texas? You want to live in DC? There's BYU fans everywhere. And like every major metro, wherever you want to go, there's a solid contingent of people that will hire you. And that's whether you are a regular student and even more so if you are a football player. And obviously the Hagen family is very intelligent. Like, Cody's not just some dumb jock, right? Like, you don't end up being a quarterback that signs with Yale if you are, you know, just a jock. And so Cody, the academic, yeah. or getting an offer from Stanford for Cody, right? And so this is a huge deal, and cannot be understated of what it's, you know, what this does for the program going forward.
Everything you said, I don't know if you've had a chance to read my newsletter that's coming out tomorrow or not. But
I've not looked at it.
You're hitting on a lot of the things that I've discussed. Now, I preface, and I'll give an update for all of our listeners. Please subscribe to the Give 'Em Hell Brigham newsletter. Whether you pay, there is a pay model. It is better. It is more. There is a free model as well. If you don't want to pay, you want to test us out first, please subscribe. It will cost you absolutely nothing to get a small taste of what Give 'Em Hell Brigham, the newsletter, has to offer. It's basically everything you love about the show in written form, more detail, more greatness. In tomorrow's newsletter, I go into a lot of detail. There's like 1,500 words about how the pendulum seems to be swinging from, like, over the last decade. Look, college football is cyclical. And over the last decade, two decades, really, Utah has dominated the BYU-Utah rivalry. And that's okay, right? Through the 80s and 90s, it was dominated by BYU. Prior to Lavelle, it was dominated by Utah. And that pendulum just swings back and forth. One win, you know, one conference invite, one recruit, like, none of that stuff by itself means that the pendulum is swinging. But in this article, I talk about evidence by Utah fans that, and it's not a rivalry smack article, it's about BYU, but I'm using the Utah fans and what's happening, what we're seeing and hearing from them as kind of evidence that, hey, that pendulum, at worst, BYU's caught it. It's no longer swinging at them more. I think they've probably pushed it and it's starting to go back in the other direction. And plays like this, like, think about, okay, Cody Hagan, yeah, he grew up a Utah fan. Sean played there. It's a legacy kid. How many times over the last two decades have you watched Jake Murphy or Harrison Handley or Cole Fotheringham or Jaron Kump, or the list goes on and on and on, of kids who had obvious BYU ties, whether they were legacy kids or like Garrett Bowles that were once committed to the program? How many times over the last two decades have we said as BYU fans, man, all of these kids that should be at BYU are tearing it up at Utah? And take that beyond just BYU and Utah. How many kids should be at BYU that have got away and are USC or at Oregon or whatever, kids that BYU wanted? You're hearing that pop up from Utah fans. And that's, we can recognize that as BYU fans, because it's the same thing we've been saying for two decades.
Right.
But Zach Wilson, like, I get it on paper. I would have taken Jack Tuttle over Zach Wilson too. Like, that was the better recruit, but recruiting's just the first quarter of the game, and Jack Tuttle went nowhere. And Zach Wilson, yeah, maybe he was behind in the game early on, and Utah made a good decision. They went up 21-0 real quick in the first quarter, but Zach Wilson came back, and by the end of their careers, it's very clear that Utah missed the boat. They missed the boat in a big way. And so you've heard their fans say, man, how did we miss on Zach Wilson? How did we miss on Jackson Dart? How did we miss on Cody Hagan? Oh my gosh, Ben Moa. I don't think us as BYU fans appreciate how big of a deal Ben Moa is for Utah. He was legitimately a legend at BYU, or at the University of Utah. And now they're saying Ben Moa, freaking Ben Moa's kids are not playing at Utah. What is going on? Well, yeah, I mean, we recognize that. We've been saying that for two decades. We've been saying that about James Empey almost played at Utah. He signed with Utah. And if it wasn't for Bronco taking a Virginia job, James Empey is playing at Utah right now. And so all of this is to say that it seems like the pendulum, and there's a lot more details than just this one. And I go into that in the newsletter tomorrow. So please subscribe. But there's a lot of evidence, Cody Hagan being the latest, that maybe that pendulum is swinging back. Maybe the cycle, we're coming up on a new cycle, a new dispensation, if you will. And it's now back into BYU's favor. Now, obviously, cycles don't happen overnight. We've got to see what happens over the course of the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years. But there's a lot of evidence, I think, that would support the idea that this cycle is coming back towards BYU.
And it just makes me happy, right? We did our decade in the wilderness. I'm so glad it wasn't 40 years, but we did our decade in the wilderness, and it seems like we are going finally heading towards the promised land.
Yeah, I agree. It's a big deal. Now, we were talking about Utah State before Cody Hagan's commitment really threw everything off, and you were talking about their defensive line. And I'll be honest, I didn't really register anything else other than their defensive line is small and bad. And yes. I agree. They are small and they are bad.
They are bad. And then the other thing I have now is their QB can run. So Bonner really can't, but they can't scoot, right? Like they're like Baylor Romney, what someone mentioned and thing. It's Baylor Romney levels of, you know, you can run a little bit, or like maybe Zach Wilson, like you can run a little bit and get a first down here or there, but they're not going to blow things open with their feet like Jaren Hall can. And so,
yeah.
And so it's containment wise.
Peasley's a little bit more mobile than Bonner. Bonner really can't do much. Bonner can escape a sack, but that's about all that Bonner can do. Peasley can scoot a little, but you're right. I mean, it's not Jaden Daniels. It's right. Not Timmy McClain. Like Timmy McClain looked like Michael Vick at times. Like he's not, Andrew Peasley is not Timmy McClain. So conceivably the BYU offense, or excuse me, the BYU defensive line should be able to contain him a little bit better than they did some of those other guys. But he does provide a threat. He is still a mobile threat. The one thing that scares me about this game, going into this game tomorrow, and admittedly, I'm not overly concerned about a BYU loss, but if BYU is going to lose, it's the Utah State wide receivers that really scare me. I don't think that any of them are NFL talents, but they have, and they always do. This is what Utah State is built upon over the last several years. They have small, incredibly fast, and incredibly athletic wide receivers. And Blake Anderson likes to spread them out and spread the offense out, or spread the defense out. And when we've seen that in the past, when teams have done that against BYU in the past, that's when Elisa Tuiaki tends to go really, really conservative. And I think that might be the right play as long as Logan Bonner's there, because he's proven to be an inaccurate quarterback. But if he finds his accuracy this week, Utah State's wide receivers could find some space. They have the athleticism to be really difficult to cover with a zone-based defense. And I'm nervous a little bit about that. That is the one area that BYU's got to figure out how to contain those super fast, super athletic wide receivers that you don't know their names, you've never heard of them. Got to contain those guys.
And we had similar, I mean, we saw similar receivers too with USF. Their receiving core, they can run just as fast as anybody else, right? And so we've faced fast receivers, and this is, if that's the biggest concern, I mean, we do have the defensive, we have the secondary to be able to free things up a bit more. And we even saw, because Boise State doesn't have a great D-line either, and they ran, you know, they just kind of got in passing lanes, and they just made a wall of in front of Bonner, and he struggled, and that's why they benched him twice in the same game, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's I think that will definitely be, that is always the risk, is the big play, but our defense is built around preventing that big play, and that's really what Utah State will need to keep momentum in this game. And this is a game where we should be able to go in and physically against that front seven. Like, you remember the 2012 Utah game when Star Lotulelei was going up against 250-pound Blair Tuchus, or however you say his name, at center. This is like the opposite of that, right? And so we should be able to control the ball on the ground. We should be able to run well, and we should win this game handily. There have been a couple comments. I know, like, I think Neil Powell said something in effect of like, oh, they consider us a rival, but we don't really consider them one. And things like that. So you got to shut up, and like, you can't feed somebody who considers you a rival, right? Like, you can't feed them any more information to get hyped up, especially when it's their Super Bowl. But I think this is a game that we should win handily, even with the offense being banged up what it is, because I don't think their secondary, I think their defense is about what USF's is. And we are getting enough guys back on our defense, especially, you know, being able to stop the run, and getting Tyler Batty and Nysa Mahe back will be huge. And I went back through and looked at PFF from last weekend. Like, there was a one point, hold on, let me pull up the notes here. We got down to the fifth string on defense. I don't, like, it was the game was never in doubt, because we were just saying, hey, let's just get everybody down there that we can. Well,
and it really was. And in a game that Mahe Batty. I mean, there were a bunch of guys who didn't play, right? Like, that were hurt and they didn't play at all. There were 19 guys that played 20% or more of the snaps last week.
Right. So that's a huge rotation.
Huge rotation.
And even like Alden Tofa got 17 snaps last week. He hasn't played all year.
Right.
Really. And we had, who was it that I was thinking of? Like Mitchell Price got time. Oh, we got a Jacob Boren got snaps. He only got two snaps, but Jacob Boren got snaps. Do you know who Jacob Boren is, Jeff?
I do know who Jacob Boren is.
Jacob Boren is a walk-on from who played at Highland High School, who is a 5'9", 180-pound wide receiver. And he may actually know he got moved to defense. He played on defense, but he was listed on BYU's roster as a wide receiver.
Yeah.
That's how deep we went into the depth chart last week.
John Nelson played like, you haven't pulled up. I think he played like 20 snaps or something like that last week.
25.
So, John Nelson, the kid out of Salem Hills that nobody knew who he was, and is here in his true, I guess he was a gray shirt. Do you still count as a true freshman if you're a gray shirt? I
don't know. Yes. Yeah. That's,
I mean, it's your true freshman ineligibility, but I don't know. Anyway, John Nelson, he played 25 snaps. So yeah, BYU was going deep.
I mean, let's see here. So let's see. McLean had 24 pass attempts and then they had 48 carries. So that's okay. So they ran 72 plays and you look at, okay. So if we look at the BYU total snaps, Wilger had 64, Bywater 62, Mendel and Caleb Hayes each had 60. Ammon Hanneman played 59 snaps.
And I think that's gonna continue.
And then Malik Moore played 50 snaps, and then everybody else was like 44 or less. So right. You had like the vast majority. You had like five guys who played 3/4 of the snaps, and then everybody else is just like, you got John Nelson and Uriah Leitawa playing roughly the same number of snaps. Right. Hayden Livingston playing about 50. Playing a third of the snaps at free safety while Malik Moore got the other 2/3. Like, it was a huge game for building depth. Like, and no matter what you do in practice, you can't really replicate that.
And it's a good benefit. It's frustrating to watch, right? Like, it is frustrating to watch those games. We talked about it last week that mindset is frustrating of, hey, we're going to go into this game planning on emptying the bench. Like, it sets you up for a dogfight a little bit more than it probably should be. And that's kind of what we saw last week with a fired up team like Utah State. That's going to want to beat BYU more than they want to beat anybody else on their schedule. That mindset might cost BYU a win, but if the mindset is right, there's just very little path that I can see for a Utah State win. Now, they might keep it close. I think the spread is at 9. I could see them covering the spread. Logan's not an easy place to play. It's a small stadium, but it's not an easy place to play. BYU's sideline will be right in front of the student section. That's a new change this year that Blake Anderson put the visitors right in front of the student section. That's going to be tough. I mean, this is a tough game, but BYU should win this game. There's not very many paths to a Utah State victory, but if BYU comes in overlooking this team at all, I can promise you Utah State is not overlooking them. But what you're saying, Utah State is bad. They are giving up. You think BYU's defense has been frustrating to watch, especially last week? BYU's defense is not good, right? Not good in terms of yards per play. Very, very poor. Utah State's is worse. BYU is giving up just under 5.8 yards per play. And Utah State is giving up just about 6.5. And so as frustrating as BYU's defense has been to watch, Utah State is more frustrating, and Utah State has not played Arizona State and Utah and South Florida for that matter. They have played a good team in Boise, a ho-hum team in Washington State and North Dakota. And I can't even remember who else, somebody similar to North Dakota.
No, I think they had a bye. They're only three. Let me see. Who did they play?
No, they're 3-1. I don't remember who they played, but it wasn't anybody.
Washington State North. Oh, Air Force. They were down big against
Air Force.
They were down. Yeah, they were down bigly to Air Force and then came back and scored 21 points in the third and 15 in the fourth and won 49-45.
Yeah. So the Falcons. BYU should be able to score. There is concern that Utah State's going to be able to move the ball, and they've got juice on their offense. There's no question they've got some juice. Their performance last week, if you just look at the box score and the final score, I think they lost 27, something like that, to 3. The 3 is a little bit of a misnomer. There were some pretty ill-timed turnovers in the red zone. But even without those, I mean, Utah State really 17, 24 points maybe at most against a decent Boise State team. Not a Boise State team like we've seen in the past, but a solid Boise State team. There's little reason to doubt that BYU's defense should be able to contain them. The wide receivers scare me. That's about it.
The wide receivers scare me, but if we get after their quarterback, the wide receivers scare me, but their quarterbacks do not scare me.
Fair.
I think enough that's fair. To make me, like, if we go completely busted and someone's wide open, they're going to get there. But
they're going to make plays.
But they don't have a quarterback that can throw receivers open.
That's correct. That is correct. Now, I do think that we can probably make the argument of their quarterback, is he good enough to score 24 points? Probably. But is their defense good enough to hold BYU under 35, under 40? Probably not.
Right.
And so that's really where the balance is. Now, it is a rivalry game. Like, despite what people want to say, right, it is a rivalry game. Tensions are going to be high. It will probably be closer than it would be if this was the exact same team but named New Mexico instead of Utah State. It will probably be closer than that game would be because of that emotional component that you really can't quantify.
Yeah, and there will be that, but I don't know. Like, I mean, that's the only time they really sell out at home is right when BYU comes to town, and I could see it. I mean, it's even I've only gone to one game in Logan, and that was in 2015, and the crowd was probably like 30-40% BYU fans, and I expect it to probably be pretty similar again this year.
I think it'll be close. The one thing that makes that place so difficult, now I do have questions. I don't know what, I mean, the size of their stadium, there's 25,000 seats. They dedicate, it really is like goal line to goal line and the entire lower level to the student section on the east side. I don't know how many seats that is, but I'm assuming it's like 7,000. I mean, it's a pretty substantial amount of their stadium. They can't possibly. Now then you figure, I don't know, what, 500, 1,000 seats for visitors, visiting family, probably more than 1,000, I would think. I would imagine BYU's allotment is probably 2,000 seats, minus you add that with the 7,000 seats that that go to the student section. Utah State is only selling, roughly, based on this very quick and very much a swag guess here, right? They're only selling 12,000-13,000 tickets a game.
It's sad.
It's a little bit of a bananas number, isn't it? But it is a tough place to play. I enjoy watching games in Logan. It's small, so there's not a bad seat there. What I hate, and we're going to talk about
their amenities suck.
Oh, their amenities suck. No question. What I hate even more than their sucky amenities, and they suck bad, is the path to get to those amenities. It is an absolute nightmare, especially if you're on the east sideline. Those of you who are sitting in the BYU section this week, I am sorry for you. Now, the good news is I think Utah State moved the visitor section to the south a couple of sections this year. It used to be in the very northeast corner. And the way that Utah State Stadium is designed, there is only one exit on the east side. You cannot exit to the north. You cannot exit to the east. You have to funnel to the south. And the lower section and the upper section, there's only one walkway. So when game time hits, or when the clock hits zero, and everybody on that side of the stadium and the south end zone is trying to exit the stadium, they're all going on the same path. And it is an absolute nightmare. Getting a hot dog at halftime will take forever.
Don't even try it. Just go get your Bahama Mama at a Maverick in Logan before.
And it will be better.
And it will be better.
It will be better. But in terms of watching the game, I really enjoy it there. And now you guys know, sit on the west side. I will be sitting on the west side. The west side, still not great, but infinitely better than what it is in terms of getting to and fro. But I mean, all things considered, I really hate Utah State, and I'm making a very, very conscious effort to not rail on Utah State right now, because
Aggie Facts. We're gonna have Aggie Facts Thursday, which is if any of you follow Kyle Umlang, he's a big Texas fan, and every Thursday he does Aggie Facts Thursday, where he just posts things ripping on A&M, and so we're gonna copy that this week.
And we've had to invite a very, very, very talented friend to help us out.
And so with that, we're gonna kind of wrap up this show here with what would be our normal end of the show, going through our we never talked about the injuries on offense.
There's a bunch.
So there are a bunch. So obviously you can expect Baylor again. If you watched the game last week and any offensive linemen that seemed to be hurt at any point of the game last week, you can expect them to be resting. That includes semi-offensive line that may occasionally mostly block, but occasionally catch passes and jump over people. Those are also included in this. I think that actually covers the bulk.
I think you, that was a page out of my book right there. That's how you give the news without giving the news.
Right. I've learned a thing or two from you.
I don't have much to teach, so I'm glad that I taught that. Somebody reached out to me when I started hearing buzz about the Cody Hagan news. And, I've been doing this game all for the last like 48 hours. So yeah, I mean, give the news, but don't give the news.
And so let he who hath or she who hath ears to hear, let him hear. So we do have on now our list of other good games to watch, which I personally kind of like the Friday games, because it frees up your whole Saturday to just like watch every other good game. And I kind of also don't mind the late games now that I'm not living on the East Coast. I don't mind the 8 o'clock kickoffs, because
you watch all day.
I get to watch all the other games. And then the only other game on is, you might have some weird Pac-12 after dark, but they can rot, so I don't care. So other games this week that will be fun to watch tomorrow night. If you need a little we have Virginia at Miami tonight. That's probably going to be ugly. Both the uniforms with clashing orange accents and just the play on the field. I want to watch that. Actually, one thing I have noticed or that they've been doing is every Thursday night, ESPN has been putting an HBCU game. And the last few weeks, it's been better than the FBS game. They've been really, really good games. And so Arkansas Pine Bluff is playing Prairie View tonight as well. If you need something to tune into, I would probably honestly watch that game over Virginia Miami, because if I'm going to watch bad football, at least let it be at a level where I'm assuming it to be kind of bad football.
I'll probably watch Virginia Miami just because it is Virginia, and not because of the Bronco element, couldn't care less, but because of the,
we're playing Virginia in three weeks.
Yeah. So right. I feel like you got to watch them.
On Friday, the fun game before ours starts an hour and a half before ours, so you can watch the first half of it. Houston at Tulsa, that will be fun. Watch the Red Cougars and sustain the 12 against Tulsa. I mean, that should be a fun offensive game between those two schools, and it will probably be the opposite of Miami Virginia in terms of aesthetics, and will be two very clean looking uniforms playing each other. Saturday morning, the big one is the Wisconsin Michigan game. That's going to be fine. The big one for me is Arkansas at Georgia, kicking off at 10 a.m. the early game on ESPN. I think that's going to be a fun game.
I think it will be, honestly, I think it's the game that Arkansas is exposed.
They will be exposed, but
I think it will be fun.
It will be fun. And if they can keep it close, they can all, even if they lose, they can lose this game and not drop, right? Because if you're number 8 and you lose by a field goal to number 2 on the road, you're in the right spot, right? Yep. And so, it was definitely a time for a quality loss. In the next window, we got USC at Colorado. If you want, that's on Pac-12 Network. So sorry, none of you will be able to watch that. Cincinnati at Notre Dame on NBC. That will be the fun one. I will be cheering my heart out for the Bearcats.
Same.
Because they need to knock it off. And if you, where Cincinnati is in the rankings has zero impact whatsoever on BYU being in the Fiesta Bowl. Even if you say like, oh, well, we need them to be behind us, so they're not, you know, in, you could say they need to be in front of us, so they're not taking spots. They need to be behind us with us. If they move down, it means we're moving up. So it all washes out. It's not like we're going to stay pegged at one number and everyone on both sides is going to be moving. Like everyone, there's lots of moving parts.
Here's the game that in that time slot that I'm looking forward to. And maybe this is what you were just about to mention. Kansas State, Oklahoma. That's going to be, I think, the most exciting game of Saturday.
Because Oklahoma has not looked great, and this could be a shot for K-State to have a three-game winning streak against the Sooners.
And Manhattan, Kansas, like, there's not much to do in Manhattan, Kansas, but Kansas State football, it's a pretty fun environment. And with the Sooners coming to town, that's going to be a really, really good game. I think that's my favorite game of the day. Maybe Oklahoma State, Baylor. I got apparently a Big 12 thing going on this week, but I really like that K-State, Oklahoma game.
I like the K-State Oklahoma. Also at that same time slot kicking off is Nevada at Boise State. I would flip over to that on FS1 just for a little bit to watch Carson Strong. He's legit and he is fun to watch, and Nevada is fun. I'm so excited for the Nevada Fresno game to see Carson Strong and Jake Haner play. Ole Miss at Alabama. The thing is, Alabama is not even fun to watch anymore. That should be a good matchup, but Alabama is too good. So I don't even care about watching them.
One of the craziest things involving Georgia and Alabama, those are two games. Let's see. Ole Miss is a top 15 team, right? I think they're ranked 14th right now, something like that, 12th. They are a 14.5 point dog. And Arkansas is ranked 8th, and they are an 18.5 point dog. So that is how much of a gap there is between 1 and 2 and everybody else, that if you are ranked the 8th best team in the country, you are still going to be favored you are going to be a dog by nearly 3 touchdowns when you play number 2.
Right.
That's wild.
It's insane. And I do really like that Baylor Oklahoma State game. That will be a good test for Baylor. I mean, obviously they pulled off the big upset of ISU last week.
But State sucks, and we knew that a little bit.
Right. And so it's kind of Baylor's also, are they, you know, the paper tiger? And so that'll be a good test for them, because Oklahoma State is a good team. Kicking off at that same time on CBS Sports, Liberty at UAB. If you want to watch this, UAB is one of the better G5 teams. They got a good thing going down there. And the quarterback, Malik Willis, the quarterback at Liberty, is fun as hell to watch. There's not really in that slot. I mean, you can kind of bounce around between Baylor, Okie State, and that Liberty UAB game. There's not much going on there. The afternoon games will all be done. And the night games, there's really not any good one. I mean, you got Fresno. The late game is Fresno State, Hawaii, kicking off at 8 Pacific. Right. But then it's like, what, Northwestern, Nebraska, UConn at Vanderbilt. You do have Auburn at LSU. That will be fun. That's the late SEC game. And that is weird, because that's kicking
UCLA off. And Arizona State will be a good one at that late kick game. It's on FS1, so it'll be in 4K. Will be a fun game to watch.
That's true. The Auburn LSU one, that one's a little weird because it's kicking off at 8 Central.
That is weird.
Well, it's weird for them. But there's a decent, a good slate. So those are the games that we would watch. And Jeff, I will say, until we talk in a couple hours to do the second portion of this episode, give them hell, man.
Give him hell.
Jeff, we have a visitor.
We have the visitor. It's not just a visitor.
An esteemed visitor.
Yeah, this is a big deal. This is, I mean, I think we're allowed to say this. I don't know why we wouldn't be. We have BYU TV on Give Him Hell Brigham.
Yeah, it's usually, and it actually, BYU TV on Give Him Hell Brigham happened before they ever had us on BYU TV.
Yeah, this is a big deal. Hema, man. Hema Haimuli.
What's up?
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm excited to be on. I mean, freaking A, it took you guys long enough. Come on.
You were just like, you were a scrub doing late nights at KSL. So we had to, I'm sorry. We didn't appreciate you. We didn't know what we were missing out on until you went big time. And You know, it's just
it's okay.
Once you shaved your face, it's like you're a whole new person.
And in fairness to us, right? I mean, because we're all about number one here, so we got to defend us. We don't do guests very often. So if you look at it like in terms of time, yeah, we dropped the ball. It's been like a year and a half, but you're only like our like seventh guest total. So top seven's not bad.
Right.
You know what? I'm no complaints here. Top seven. I've never been top seven in anything. So I appreciate it.
Like the only other guest we've had since the season started was Max Hall. So
cool. I'm after Max. That's cool.
So you're number two right there. So Hima has some very big feelings about Utah State and the current administration of their program. And I guess before we jump into our take of Aggie Fact Thursday, we can let you share your piece. Try not to get yourself fired from your job. This is off the record. You are not speaking in any capacity related to BYU TV, but Utah State did Frank Miley, who's a damn good coach, dirty twice.
Absolutely. No, I do have some strong feelings about this. And man, when I started tweeting about it, a bunch of Utah State fans came off the farm and were trying to get at me. And it was weird because they put down their cow pie shovels and picked up their pitchforks. And they really tried to like get at me for those comments where I basically said that, you know, so let's back up a bit because there was last year or was it the 2019? I don't remember. These last 3 years have been one big blur to me, but it came out that allegedly it came out that the Utah State program wouldn't hire Frank Miley because A, of his Polynesian background, but also his LDS background. I believe it was the who said that? Was it the president of the school?
I think it was in like a Zoom call with the team leadership. Yeah. The players all wanted Frank.
Right. And then those comments were made, and then like the players ended up going on strike or something and like deciding not to participate in any school activities or whatever. So that comes out, and that's when it started, you know, the wheels started turning where I'm like, you know what, that's freaking true. Like it's gotta be true because of this fact. Frank Miley has been the interim head coach two times, and they should have hired him the first time, honestly, but for some reason they decided not to hire him and go with freaking Gary Anderson again. So like round two of Gary Anderson, which makes no sense.
Man.
And then, you know, when Gary Anderson eventually gets let go because he was terrible, Frank Miley takes the interim spot again. Like they asked him again to be the interim head coach for the team.
And during a crappy time too, like during the COVID year when everything is bananas. So like, not only is he the interim coach of a struggling program that fired their coach, it's during the weirdest year of college football ever. Like that was a huge task.
He stuck around after he got passed up the first time. Like he could have, like they could have had a lifer there at Utah State.
For sure. And like did they pass him up the first time? They passed him up after he won them a bowl game. Like he was the head coach for that bowl game, and I think it was New Mexico. I think it was the New Mexico Bowl, and they played like North Dakota or something like that, and they killed
North Texas. Yeah.
Oh, North Texas. That's right. And and you know, you would think, oh, he won us a bowl game after being thrown in there. And no, they went to Gary Anderson, and then Gary Anderson gets let go, and they had another opportunity to give Frank Miley the head coaching job, and they didn't. And so, so I just feel like, you know, Frank Miley has done so much for that program. I mean, so many Polynesian athletes that I know personally went up there for him. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they didn't give him a shot, it's very disappointing. And you can't help but wonder like what their actual reasons are, because for me, Coach Miley passes the eye test.
You know, it's interesting. I mean, we're going to have fun on this show. I don't want to speculate too much, but like Justin Enna, they did him pretty dirty too. that they bring him over, put him in a position that he's probably not quite ready for. And so you should know that there's going to be a leash there. Like you're going to have a learning curve. And instead they demote him right away. He starts going through some difficult stuff off the field in his personal life, and he gets the boot like right away. Like, come on. Utah State has done everything they can to say to LDS and Polynesian people, hey, don't come play here, which is just bizarre because you're in Logan, Utah. Like, if you're not getting LDS talent and Polynesian talent, then what the hell are you getting? It's bizarre. Yeah.
And it's crazy too. Like, the people were coming after me like, oh, they did an investigation and found out, you know, there was no racism or whatever. And like, that's not true. They, first of all, the investigation was internal. Like, it was paid for by the Utah State, board, you know, of the school. So yeah, of course they're not going to find anything because who's paying the bill. Right.
Right.
And then second of all, when the, you can look up the article, whether on Deseret News or like KSL, and it says that, like, it didn't say that they didn't find racism. They said that basically that the student athletes that, you know, went on strike or whatever, that they overreacted or they miscommunicated or they misunderstood. That's
they misrepresented what was really said, but like, no, they still said it. So that was very much a white person telling you what is and isn't racist, right? Like that's how that came off to me at the time.
You know, exactly. It's like, you know, like it's not racism. You guys just didn't understand what she's saying. She was saying, so, you know, it's all a big mess. And I don't, you know, I have a lot of friends and family that played for and some are still at Utah State. And so, like, you know, I don't wish to like smear that legacy or whatever, but I mean, they did Frank Miley dirty. There's no doubt about that. And there's still some issues that they've got to freaking figure out up there.
And that's one group of people you don't want to miss. Like, if you do, so is Frank Miley, is he Tongan or someone?
Yeah, he's Tongan.
Okay. So it doesn't matter though. Like, if you do a Polynesian coach dirty, it's like they just inherently offended half of the high school football players in the entire state of Utah, all of Euless, Texas, the entire Bay Area, a good chunk of Southern California, all of Hawaii, and the entire countries of Tonga, Samoa, Fiji, Kiribati, New Zealand.
All the islands. Yeah.
It's like everything. Like, that's the last group of people I would ever want to anger in my life. And it's conversely too, I mean, you look at, it seems like, and we had someone on our Discord server mention, who is another subscriber on our Discord, who is Polynesian himself. He mentioned that it seems like even with Kalani, that kind of the Polynesian fans are coming back. Like, they're always the very, very devout LDS, very strongly BYU leaning families never left, but you will see there's a lot more, diversity in the crowd in terms of the Polynesian fans that are coming back to the stadium, guys that are repping BYU, even though they don't care about church at all, like very far from the church. Right. And so it is a very good thing. And they missed Utah State screwed up. So let's get in.
Yeah.
Well, actually, this is first. Jeff said on Sunday night on our show that he hates Utah State more than Utah. Where do you stand?
Interesting. So I don't know. I would say, honestly, personally, I don't like dislike either school per se, because like I said, Polynesians, like you said, like,
it's,
you
guys, it's also everywhere. Distant for you.
Yeah. There, I mean, there's, I've had cousins play for all these teams or whatever, but I can speak on the fandom. Like, I can tell you which fans I dislike the most. And honestly, it's the Utah fans I dislike the most. The Utah State fans are just kind of annoying. I think that's how I would place it. Like, Utah is like, I dislike the fans because there are some just very disrespectful people on there. Mm-hmm. And then Utah State, it's just like, I don't know, man. It's like when you're like little cousins or whatever, or talking trash on you or whatever, but you don't really care. Like, cause you know that you could destroy
them. It's true. Let me tell you why I hate Utah State more.
Okay. Let's hear it.
I was born in Logan. My parents are both the product of two individual dairy farms in Cache Valley, Utah. So I got some ties into Cache Valley. And okay. when it comes to their fans, I know all of them. There's only like 4 or 5 dozen of them. And I know single one of them. And they're the worst. They're the absolute worst. But we don't notice them on this side of the canyon because there's only a few of them. It's like if you see a scorpion in Utah, you're going to think, holy shit, that's a scorpion. You're going to hate it. But you've never seen a scorpion in Utah. So you're going to step on it, do whatever you do, be a little bit freaked out and annoyed because of the scorpion. But then you're going to get on with your life. And when somebody asks you, hey, are scorpions or mosquitoes worse? You're going to say, well, mosquitoes, because I always have mosquitoes. But if there were as many scorpions as there are mosquitoes, you would hate the scorpions way worse. And that is a Utah State fan. They are the scorpions. Maybe cockroaches is better. I don't know. They're just the worst. Then they don't understand. And I'm speaking generally, but again, there's only a few dozen of them, and I feel like I know all of them. They don't really understand the game. They don't care about the game. They've never had a football team that's worth caring about. So wins, losses, they don't care. They just are there to be annoying. That is the purpose of being a Utah State fan. That's it. They're just insufferable. That's what it is for me.
they are insufferable. So before we jump in, I have one more question. So they, and I know you, him, you did mention that it is different for Polynesian families, especially just because you have family ties to literally every school in the state, right? Like from Logan down to St. George, you're related to at least some. There are no, so I know like a lot of, you know, Polynesian families or maybe their immediate families will lean, like obviously your family, your BYU family, you probably have cousins that are maybe like their immediate family, Utah family. There's nobody that's a Utah State family. Like there are no like Polynesian, right? Because it's like, I mean, it's like you have like kid, like the Pututaus, like that is their Utah family, right? Sure. And it's like the Himulis, like that is a BYU name. The Kafusis are kind of split, whatever, but it's, there's no, it's like everyone is just like, oh yeah, I had a cousin who wasn't quite good enough to go to play or BYU Utah, but it's still awesome that they got to play FBS football. I mean, that's, everyone would kill for that opportunity. So we went up to Logan for a few games, right? Like it's, it really is like the little brother of like,
that's,
they were really, really good, but just not quite good enough. So we went to Logan.
Yeah. No, you know what? That's really interesting because, you know, we do tend to like outside of football, we'll like refer to our families, you know, as like, you know, not only are we like a BYU family, like the Himulis, but there's, you know, there's a Utah County Himulis, and then there's like Bountiful Himulis, which is where I came from. So like the Damunis, for example, like we like refer to them as like the Cache Valley Damunis, you know, not necessarily the Utah State Damunis, even though like Wanga is still like in the administration up there, but like Lavani is like at Stanford with my little brother, you know, and and then like, you know, Jack obviously is at BYU and like,
right. And Jovess is so on like, a mission, but signed with BYU.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, they're not, I think you're right. And I never thought about that before. There's not necessarily a Utah State like family. The closest are the Damunis, and like most of them aren't even at Utah State. So.
No, even if they're at Utah State, they're not really part of Utah State. And like the Caressas, like they could have gone to Utah State. They're Cache Valley royalty. No, they got the hell out of there as soon as they could because they didn't want to go to Utah State.
Well, as they married, they married into BYU royalty because Jake and Alex's mom is a Haas. So they
got out of there.
They upgraded.
And like Gary Anderson, when he was there the first time, Keegan Anderson signed with BYU. Like he wasn't going to go to Utah State. So even Utah State people don't want their kids at Utah State. It's the worst. That's true. I learned today. And Garrett, I don't know, like we don't have a script or anything. I'm just like,
we can get into the facts now. Some of these can be real. Some of them can be fake, but so, they're all real in our hearts.
The Scotsman, like the thing they do with the arms before every game. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize this. One, it's not their school song. It's like an alternate school song, which I didn't know.
I thought that it, okay.
Have you ever read the lyrics to the Scotsman?
It's like, show me a Scotsman who doesn't love a thistle or something like something about an Englishman who doesn't. And then starts talking about like tumbleweeds.
Well, that's the part that it's like, wait a minute. Like everybody mocks them for being farmers. And like I said, I'm the product of farmers. I love farmers. But the last line, so the only mention of an Aggie is, show me a true Aggie who doesn't love the sagebrush. What? This is the school song. It wasn't always their school song. You could read about it right on their website. They didn't start like playing it in the stadiums until like the early 90s. And right in the story of from Utah State, like hyping up their own song, they say like, oh yeah, we started to play it and the crowd didn't know what it was and it wasn't good. And no, there was no interaction. Nobody liked it. The Scotsman has to be the weirdest thing about Utah. And this is a state that we are full of all of our Mormon history. And I still think the Scotsman is the weirdest thing that's ever come out of Utah. It just makes no sense to me.
Yeah, that's true. So let me just read out the lyrics for those who aren't familiar. So it goes, show me the Scotsman who doesn't love the thistle. Show me the Englishman who doesn't love the rose. Show me the true-blooded Aggie from Utah who doesn't love the spot where the sagebrush grows.
Yeah, what? What is that? And like, these people live for it up there, man. Like, watch them before the game. The Scotsman is like Christmas morning for that student section. It makes no sense.
I will have to go back and find. I made a video. The sound of that. There's like in the claymation Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer Christmas movie. There's like the scene where there, or maybe it's like Santa Claus is coming to town or something, where it's like all of the elves are going around the factory making the toys. That's what it sounds like. And I took the music from it and set it to that. I'll have to post it. But it's like, it is a cartoon song. But so another thing that's weird other than this. So I went back, if you go back and look at their conference history, and the basically, if Utah State ever gets invited to your conference, you're dead man walking. So if you look at their conference history, so they started, they were decent when there was the Rocky Mountain Conference, and then, which is now a Division II conference, BYU, Utah, Wyoming, Colorado State all used to be in there. That was the last time. And then they all moved, then went to the Mountain States Athletic Conference, which was renamed to the Skyline Conference. So that was the thing. And then the Skyline died when the WAC was created. So then Utah State went independent because nobody invited them. Then they joined the Big West. Then went back to being independent because the Big West dropped football. And then they were in the Sun Belt for 2 years, got kicked. And then finally, after powerhouses of UTEP, Rice, Louisiana Tech, and Tulsa left the WAC to go to Conference USA, that's when the WAC finally said, okay, Utah State, you've been in our footprint for the last 40 years and you were in the same conference of all of our members. It's 2005. You can come down and join us. And then in 2011, they were the, or 2012, they were the conference champion of the final year of the WAC. And they were in that league with San Jose State, Louisiana Tech, UT San Antonio, their first year FBS, Texas State, their first year FBS, Idaho and New Mexico State. And then finally the Mountain West called them up. So if
now dying, so.
And if the Mountain West dies, there is literally nowhere for Utah State to go.
Wow. I didn't even realize that, like back in like the heyday when my like dad played and stuff like that, you know, when BYU and Utah were like on top of the WAC, they weren't even part of that. They were part of the Pacific Coast.
That was the Big West. The Pacific Coast Athletic Association renamed to the Big West in 1988.
What a disaster. That's so crazy. Yeah. I just assumed that they were part of the WAC, but I guess not. Yeah.
Yeah. Because we played them every year. So the longest streak, we beat them 10 times in a row from 83 to 92, but there was that stretch where, let's see. So from 1975, 1, 2, 3. So from 1975 to 2015, there was 1, 2, 3, 4 times. From 1975 to 5 times because 2014. So from in 40 years, they beat us 4 times. And there's a few years where we didn't play, but it's not
right,
good.
Right. Oh my goodness.
So what are, Jeff, what do you have an Aggie fact that you'd like to share with us?
Well, I actually do. So these are real facts. So there's a website called Unigo. And I think what it's meant to be is like an open source, like, hey, give your feedback on like your candid anonymous feedback on the school for prospective students to look at before they enroll to kind of get an idea of whether or not they should go to that school. And if you go and you look up some of the questions about Utah State, The question is what that Unigo posed is, what is the worst thing about Utah State? And I got to find his name, Scott. Scott responded and said, our football record for the last 10 years is a major damper on school identity and spirit. This is true. I mean, so the football team is ruining the college experience for other things, or for the rest of the students. They talk about how it's cold in Logan. Kevin, also, like, this is becoming a big deal. The success or the lack thereof.
The last decade is their best decade of football ever. Well, like, if that's a hamper, then boy, Kevin, do I have news for you.
Kevin said it's the football team because they always lose. Like, we now have multiple students who say that the worst part of BYU or of Utah State football is Utah State football, and it is ruining their student experience at Utah State. That's pretty bad. There's just a lot of people who respond to talk about the winter and how awful it is. And
we talk about the fact that they take recruits to Texas Roadhouse because that's the only restaurant in town. That's their big selling point.
That's 100%
Texas Roadhouse.
That is 100%.
That is the Blake Anderson, after he got hired, posted a picture, and that was the new staff all got to Logan, and that's where they went to celebrate because that was the only option.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. I also, and I don't know, I haven't verified this myself, but I think that becoming a true Aggie is you take, like, it's a boyfriend girlfriend thing, and I think that they go up to the hill where the A is, like there's this big A statue, and I think what they're supposed to do is they lay on their back and they lean over, and there's actually a pair of cow udders that are sitting like at the cross of the A, and they just have to tickle the udders. And it's one of the weirder things that Utah State fans do, but everybody does it. And anybody who tells you they're a true Aggie, they've all touched the same pair of udders and just kind of dangled around with the teats. And it's a little bit uncomfortable for me, but it's like a hell of a selling point for them. They do it all the time. It's very strange. I am not a true Aggie. I frequent Cache Valley, but I am not a true Aggie. Not because I'm afraid of udders and teats, but because I'm afraid of those udders and teats.
Oh, gosh. So other news or other facts. So all time, Utah State has been ranked in the AP poll 12 weeks. Last year, in one single season, BYU was ranked 11 of 12 AP polls. So it was just the preseason poll after we stomped Navy, went into the rankings, and never left.
That's so wild. Like, you think of like the old days when Merlin Olsen was there. It's a little bit like that long ago is a little bit like high school football. Like, if you had one player as good as Merlin Olsen, you should be in the top 25. And they weren't. I don't understand how 12 weeks ever.
Yeah. BYU has won three more bowl games than Utah State has been to bowl games total. We have nearly double the number of conference championships, and the obviously they have zero national championships, zero Heisman winners, 0 weeks at number one, and they have a whopping three consensus All-Americans. I don't even know who it is besides Merlin Olsen. Who else was a consensus All-American?
Probably Bobby Wagner. I think he was kind of a stud.
Chris Cooley?
It was... Cool. Merlin Curtis, Merlin Olsen,
Kevin Curtis, yeah, maybe
Merlin Olsen and Phil Olsen.
It
was Savon Scarver in 2018 as an all-purpose player because the return that doesn't count, does it? So they've have two. I'm not counting that one.
They claim Paul Bunyan is a tradition. I don't really know what that means, but on their official Utah State or USU.edu. Paul Bunyan is a tradition. And I,
what does that even mean?
They hung a big Paul Bunyan. I don't know if it was like a sculpture, a statue. I don't know what it was, but he is outside of the engineering building, much to the delight of engineers and the amusement of the student body at large. Paul Bunyan is there. And apparently every spring, This feels like a primary activity, but every spring somebody goes with big Paul Bunyan footprints and leaves Paul Bunyan footprints all over campus. This is true. That's not even a made up fact. This is right off of their website. Paul Bunyan is apparently like a big ass leprechaun that nobody can catch, but he leaves little footprints all throughout campus. I don't know why. They're the Aggies. What does Paul Bunyan have to do with that?
Oh my gosh.
Emma, what are some of your favorite things about Utah State?
I don't know. I guess I do have one fact that's kind of like my favorite fact about Utah State. And there's actually one person in their Hall of Fame that I actually like. And, you know, it's Lavelle Edwards. He's in both Hall of Fames. I don't know if people know that. He's in obviously BYU's Hall of Fame, but also Utah State's, because one of the best coaches to ever come out of Utah State was Lavelle Edwards. It's just like, it's just pretty crazy. They're like, I guess we'll induct him too, because he did some awesome things.
Have you ever heard the recruiting story of how Lavelle ended up in Logan?
No. He's from like Orem, right?
From like Orem or Provo, and he had a farm, and he knew that if he went to BYU, then he would have to continue to work on the farm. So he went to the only other school so that he could get away from his own personal farm and not have to work there. So the only way that Utah State has anything to do with and it's kind of ironic, really, the only way that Utah State got Lavelle Edwards is by not allowing him to farm, which is antithetical to everything we know about Utah State today.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic.
Man, I hate so much about this. We talked about it earlier in our show. I hate their stadium. There's no exit, and I'm going to continue to rant about this. So if you're listening to the show, I'm sorry. This is the second time you've heard the rant, but it's just the most like asinine thing in the world. There is no exit to the north on the east side of their stadium.
Right.
And then they have the bleachers on the east side are like not bleachers. They're like set up against the mountain. So you can't go east. You can only exit to the south. And so if you're in the far like northeast section, you're going to be sitting there after the game for like an hour waiting for everybody on the east side and in the south end zone to go out of the one single exit that is in that stadium. It is just an absolute nightmare. I was there at the 2013, maybe no 2010, the Jaime Hill game. And I remember we tried to sneak out early and we tried to just go to the north because it was like at halftime or something. And I didn't want to wait in the line of everybody trying to go to the one bathroom that is on the east side of that stadium. So we tried to go out to the north and we had to scale a mountain, man. Like it was like a deer. And we followed this little game trail down this mountain. My dad's a big dude and he has back problems. I think he fell two or three times. Like it was a joke. And then when we got there, you apparently are like in the, I don't know if this is still true, but it was 10 years ago. All of their like athletic facility and all of the where they keep all their equipment and stuff, that's where they do it, just like outright to the north. So all of a sudden we scaled this mountain and then we were like behind all the closed gates of Utah State. It was just one of the weirder experiences. We had to wander around forever trying to figure out how to get out. By the time we actually got to our car, the game had ended. We were trying to leave early, and that's how big of a nightmare it was. Their stadium is the worst.
It's the worst because also they have like no room on their sidelines. Like,
yeah,
it's literally from where the seats end, there's like a drop and then it's like the bench, right?
Yeah.
And so what I used to hate about it too is because so people are hearing, and this is true, that Utah State flips which side they sit on now, right? The team is on the west side now, and they used to be on the east side. And what I used to hate as when I would shoot the games for the job I had before this, I would have to, you know, walk back and forth on the sidelines, but there's literally zero room. So we would have to like squeeze past the benches that the players were in. And then like, there's like a little gutter where like the rain and stuff, you know, runs off of. And we had to like crawl under the gut, like through the gutter to get to like the other end zone if we're in the midst of shooting, right? The worst thing that I ever discovered was, you know, one game I was, you know, going back and forth, traipsing through the gutter when necessary to get the shots that I needed. And then one time I was like walking through the gutter and I stopped because it looked like someone was pissing like 10 feet in front of me. And I like kind of crawl out of the gutter and like stand up straight to see what that is. I thought maybe it's a Gatorade bottle or something like that. Like someone's not people pee in that gutter.
Like out of the student section?
No, the players. They like, they literally stand up and turn around and piss into that gutter that the news media has to like go through to get to the other end zone.
So, is it like, do they think it's a trough because they're cattle?
That's it's so very trough-like, but that's a real story. And like since then, I never went through that gutter, even though it was the fastest way. I'm like, I don't care if I miss four damn touchdowns. I'm not going through that gutter anymore.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, that's a true story.
Oh, they're just the worst. I just hate it. I hate this game. BYU should win this game. They should win this game going away. But this game sucks, man. Like this is the only thing there's going to be to do in Logan. Like this is, and like I said, born and raised in Cache Valley, not raised, but
how they don't, how they don't sell out every game is amazing. Like I don't get it because there's nothing else to do in Logan. You have, I mean, there's plenty of Aggie fans from Davis County North that should be able to fill out a 22,000 seat stadium where like 8,000 of the tickets are going to students.
Yeah. I mean, they should, but they don't. But this game, like it's all anybody's going to talk about. Like they don't care. And they don't care if they win or lose. Like obviously they want to win, but if they lose, they're going to hate you just the same as they did. They're going to treat you just the same as you did. Like it's one of the weirder, I don't even know what to call it. Like it's one of the weirder dynamics between two opponents ever that I can think of. Cause it really is, for all intents and purposes, Utah State has the resources, the fan base, and the support of like Weber, of like Dixie State. Like they're not that much bigger than the FCS schools here in the state of Utah, but they hate like with the passion of Auburn hating an Alabama fan. And it's just one of the weirder, I don't know. The whole thing is just weird.
Yeah. I remember the first time I experienced, like, I'm going to be honest, like before I got into sports media, I never thought about Utah State, like ever. And like, I remember walking into like my first day in sports media and I had like my BYU hat on and someone was like, oh, you're a BYU fan. Like it was before they knew who I was. And I was like, yeah, I love BYU. And they're like, oh, I'm a Utah State fan. And I'm just like, cool. And then like, I went along with what I was doing. Cause I had no idea what he was like. He's inferring that like, oh, we're rivals, but I like literally had no idea. I'm like, cool. And yeah. Then I just like kept going. Cause we don't think about it. You know,
I think I legitimately like, so my company, part of the thing, like when you introduce yourself, you have to say whether you're red or blue. And occasionally there'll be an Aggie, but I think there are more Weber State fans. Like, I think I know more Weber fans than Utah State fans.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I don't know. Like I say, guys, there's not very many fans and I feel like I know all of them because there's just not that many to know. It's tough. It's one of the weirder games. One thing I do like, and I will give them respect, like, it's a lot of fun, like to be in the student section. If you're a Utah State fan, being in the Utah State student section is fun. And they are the first school, and I think the only school that I've ever seen do this. They do it for every basketball game. I don't think they do it for every football game, but I've seen them do it for BYU games in the past. But they'll actually pass around latex gloves to everybody in the student section. And I'm sure there's a joke or two that you could make there, but they do it because it makes clapping so much louder. It's just obnoxious. Like it feels like a plastic clapper. And it's one of the cooler things that I've seen. And I wonder if they're going to do that in a night game now that BYU's bench is going to be like right up against that student section. That feels like something they should do. They do it for every basketball game. I think they have like the Utah State student section in training because Skyview and Logan High, all the high schools up there, they also do it. Cache Valley is the only place I've ever seen it. And I think it's because I'm assuming the gloves come from a dairy farm somewhere. And they just pass them out. Everybody's got them. But
yeah, that's interesting. I didn't know that because like I do remember going to like cover some games at the Spectrum, and I remember them wearing these bright blue latex gloves, and I never understood why they did that.
Yeah,
but that makes a lot of sense because they're loud. They're loud.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. But
yeah,
that's the only positive thing I could think of this week to say to Utah State. My boss is a Utah State fan, and I've just been replying to his emails this week. Like, he's my boss. I mean, I guess he could fire me. I just have been saying no. Like, everything he asks, I've just replied, just said no, not this week. I'll get to it on Monday. Because I just, there's nothing inside of me that wants to do anything for Utah State this week.
But we wanted to get Hema on here. And I think we're coming up against our timeline. Do you, any, either of you have any last final facts to share about Utah State?
I really don't. I really truly just want to, I hope BYU wins by 75.
I think I did look at, let's see, Utah State actually, I believe, initially, like, I think it was a small, it was like a tiny church school before it became an actual thing. Like it's, it was like a small college. I don't remember. I found it. It was like convert. It was like everything else. It converted into things. So in a way, it really is BYU's little brother, because it was the church school that got pawned off to and said, okay, yeah, you can go be the, go live up on the farm. But I think my favorite fact is that part of the entrance requirements, if you apply to be a student, like, I mean, they'll accept pretty much everyone, but if you would like to get a scholarship to Utah
State, they will.
You do have to milk. You have to milk a cow, and if you cannot satisfactorily do it, you will be put on academic probation.
I don't want to, I mean, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but on that Unigo website, there is a question that says, what students do you think can't come to Utah State? And I think her name was Morgan, said literally anybody can get into Utah State. Like, that was from an actual student. Like, that wasn't my feedback. That was Morgan's.
Morgan's not wrong. I do also think it is really funny to me when the handful of Utah State's, like, fans talk crap about BYU, because Utah State, this is the final actual true fact, is the only fan base on the planet whiter than BYU's. Like, you look at a crowd, it's like every stereotype of a BYU crowd is 50 times worse of, oh, these is like Utahns living in a bubble.
I believe it.
That's true. I'll just close with my Utah State comments, just saying that, you know, Frank Miley, after he got screwed over twice at the head coaching job at Utah State, ended up going as an assistant coach to Boise State. And Boise State, you know, prior to this BYU game, freaking smacked Utah State. And I'm happy about that. And I hope Utah State never beats Boise State ever again, until either the Mountain West or Boise State football programs disappear. So I hope that's a curse and that it never goes away. Thank you.
I like it.
I'll drink to that. And with that, Hema, I hope you have a fun time. So you don't work on Sports Nation, but you do the Coaches Show. So you do Kalani every Tuesday night, right? And then yep. do you help with AFR too after that or no?
No, I do. So I do the Coaches Show on Tuesdays at 6:30. And then on Saturdays, I do Countdown to Kickoff, which is the pregame show, and then the postgame show. And those are the two shows that I run. But, you know, we all help each other out here on BYU TV. So every once in a while, like, you know, I'll produce Sports Nation if, like, Ben Bagley has to leave or something like that.
Right.
And, like, vice versa. But those are the two shows that I'm in charge of, that I'm, like, the showrunner for.
That's right. So watch those. Help pad Hema's numbers. Get him a raise. If the show is better, then he can justify getting more.
Yep.
And so go watch them. They really do. The pregame show and the postgame show are both great. Oh, it's the Built Bar postgame show now. So gotta give respects to our financiers of the whole operation.
But and then, like, the Kalani's Talking Show is great, like, because when I hopped onto the show this year, my goal is to make it more about Kalani's personality, and, like, it's noticeably more Polynesian and, like, more conversational. And cool. Like, you know, Kalani just talks stories. So, like, if you want to hear a bunch of crazy stories that Kalani tells, and, like, other stories that are more in depth on the players, tune into Kalani's Talking Show.
So as the showrunner and the producer, do you kind of get to set the schedule for this is what the content should be, or are you just purely doing technical stuff?
No, it's a, yeah, it's absolutely the content aspect. And so if you like, Kalani Show is the biggest example, because I even like, when I jumped in, I like redid the open, I like redid the music. So it was more, it was like a reggae type music. The, on the set of the show, I've added like Polynesian elements, like a tapa cloth that's in the background and things like that. And so my goal coming in was just to make the vibe like more like Kalani. Like, you know, if you've ever sat and talked with Kalani before, like he makes you feel like you're the only person in the room. He's like really funny, like really chill. And that's the vibe I wanted to give off. And so I tailor my content to kind of give off that vibe when people watch the show. And so hopefully, you know, your viewers, your listeners can like check it out and let me know if it, if it's, if that worked.
I'm going to have to go find an old episode on YouTube or something to see the old intro and thing. And that, cause it is something I've noticed that it is much more conversational, and like having the deep blue segments inside of the show has been really good. And those are awesome every week. And so I think it is really cool. And I know you did on the Deep Blue podcast, you did that episode with Jerem Jordan, is really cool, and kind of talking about representation. It really matters. Right. And it's not to try to be like, I don't like woke or anything of like, oh, we need to shove this down everyone's throat, but it's like, it's the coach's show, and that's who Kalani is. Like, it needs to represent him and his personality. And obviously he was born in Tonga. He's an immigrant to the United States. He is Polynesian. Like, it should have that flair because that's him and that is his personality. So embrace who he is. And it's not, you know, and so I think it's even, I think I noticed on the, like the background, like you had like the, on the logo of the show, there's like more of like a tribal, like a Polynesian, like graphics and things. And it's just embracing, like, this is who Kalani Sitake is. This is what you're getting. And
yeah. And it's not, thanks, man. And it's not like, you know, we're trying to be woke or anything like that. Like it's sincere. Like it's, you know, I pitch it to people like this, you know, out of the 140, whatever FBS head coaches in the United States, only two of them are Polynesian and one of them is Tongan. And that's the one we got. And I'm like, why aren't we like celebrating that more, like showing it off? Because it's something very unique. It's very cool. And, you know, Kalani's done a great job of pulling a lot of Polynesian recruits and stuff like that, kind of bringing the pipeline back to Provo. And I feel like that's no coincidence. I think it's just part of who he is. And that's what I wanted to show off to people.
Yeah. And it's, I think it is a very good job, and it's something that, you know, representation, it does matter, right? And I think it's playing a thing, and you kind of seeing that with in recruiting, like in kind of what we talked about of like kind of these, you know, more fringe type, you know, like general, just also like Polynesian families like coming back to games. There's a bigger, you know, it has increased the fan support. They're just starting to show up more in things. Like, I mean, we see yesterday, right? Like Isamoa decommits from Utah. He's a Utah legacy kid who's Polynesian, and all signs are pointing to him coming to Provo. Like, that's a huge deal to be getting a legacy kid whose dad is a legend up, you know, up in Salt Lake. And so it's, you know, it's definitely turning the tide, and representation does matter, right? It's like, it's, you know, even if you don't really understand, it's like, okay, everyone thought it was cool, whether you liked him or not. In 2012, when Mitt Romney was running for president, everyone thought it was pretty cool. Like, hey, there's a Mormon guy running for president. Like, we could have an LDS president. Like, that's kind of cool. Like, and that speaks to, especially, you know, to, you know, like Polynesian kids or whatever. It's just, you know, and it, yeah. And it definitely, I don't feel there is like a shoving it down your throat vibe. It's very much like, this is who we got. This is what it is. And if it's, you know, we, if he steps on and Aaron Roderick gets promoted and becomes the next head coach or whatever reason, then it would change to embrace what Aaron Roderick is. And then, so it's, I think it is very good because it is not just like a canned, a lot of coaches shows, if you listen from other schools, are very like procedural of just like, I show up, I say the same coach speak thing, like it's this, whatever. And so I think I like getting more conversational because you get to see more of the personality, because the questions will always be coach speak answers. So just like, don't waste your time asking the questions that you know you're, you know what the answer you're going to get to is. So
for sure.
No, so that's awesome. Yeah. So that's great. And where can people find you?
So on all the social medias, my handle is @x_hems. And
were you an emo kid in high school? Because that
that seems very emo-y, right? Right. I mean, I guess it is kind of emo-y. The inside joke is, whenever I write my name on like iPhones or something like that, it always autocorrects to hems, like multiple of hem, right? Like right. Hem is not a thing. And so the X underscore thing was just because for some reason there's like a German dollar store called Hema. You can look this up. There's a there's like in Germany or something, there's like a thrift store called Hema, H-E-M-A. And so they have that handle, which totally pissed me off because I couldn't get it anywhere. And so that's why it's X underscore Hems.
Hems. So how do you, your name is pronounced Hema. What does you do have? I see on here, you have the, like the line over here. So Hema, is that that's a Maori name, right? Because I think Tongan doesn't have the line.
Yeah. So it's a macron, and it's the, that would be like the Maori spelling, but the word, the same, the name is the same in Tongan, and it means the same thing. Like most Polynesian islands, all of the languages are pretty similar.
Right.
And what Hema actually means is like, it's in Tongan, it's kind of like left, like a direction.
Uh-huh.
And in Maori and like Hawaiian, it kind of means west, like that side, like the side of something. So yeah, so that's what my name means. Nothing crazy, but I was just named after my uncle Hema Hemuli.
Right. So because your dad, Lake, is your dad.
Yeah, Lake is my dad and Hema's my uncle. You'll notice that with Polynesians, they always name their kids after their siblings. And like, for example, Spencer Reed, or Gabe Reed, who's at Stanford with my brother, his dad's not Gabe Reed, his dad is Spencer Reed, that you know, both played at BYU.
So normally you would have, like, if someone else said, that's like where you have like the second instead of junior, is like, it's awesome. Right, after my grandpa. So I'm so-and-so, I'm Garrett McClintock the second, but in college school, you're junior, even though it's
the same.
Right.
Yeah. Like it's all the same. Like they actually, in Tongan, for example, they call me Hema Si'i. Si'i is just like means little. And so I'm the little Hema, and my uncle is the big Hema. Hema Lahi. Yeah. That's what it's called. Anyways.
Awesome. No, that's cool. And I love learning stuff like that and getting, you know, it's great we get to share that with our listeners. And so go follow Hema. He is hilarious on the socials. I'm glad you haven't gone into a cave since you've been at BYU TV. You're still providing the memes and the crap posting at peak levels. So in mid season four. So I'm sure this won't be the last time we have you on the show. Thanks for hopping on, and we'll talk to you later and give him hell, man.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Let's give him hell.